You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Our current serial is The Bromances, which is the third Belladonna University serial. You can listen to the others earlier in this podcast. I'm just back from Continuum in Melbourne. I've barely had time to catch my breath, and I pre-recorded this, so I don't know if I had a good time or not, but let's just assume that I did. If you haven't already heard about it, I just wanted to take a minute to tell you about a new project that I'm kickstarting this month. So we are now in June 2017. If it's after that when you're listening to this, you can just skip past this part. It's no longer relevant to you, though hopefully the book did fund and you will be able to purchase it in the future. But anyway, Mother of Invention is going to be a fabulous, crunchy, and very feminist science fiction anthology, edited by myself and Rivka Raphael, published by 12th Planet Press, in the tradition of their other great boundary-smashing, pro-diversity anthologies, Kaleidoscope and Defying Doomsday. So our book is going to be full of stories about artificial intelligence, robots designed by women. It's just going to be really cool. We have a bunch of fantastic writers signed up to produce stories for us, including Shauna Maguire, Cameron Hurley, John Chu, Nisi Shaw, Kat Sparks, so many authors. There's also going to be an open submissions period for those of you who are writers and are already feeling really inspired by the whole idea of artificial intelligence made by women. So right now we're funding to get the book made. Link to the Kickstarter page is in the show notes. If it sounds like a book you want to support, please pledge to help us get to our crowdfunding goal. Even a really small amount will just get us that little bit closer to the magical number. Okay, so now on with the story. The Bromances, Episode 4. Hebe is unexpectedly house-proud. My magic is so embarrassing. Hallows descend from a long line of rural hedge witches. Most of our family tree gravitated to small towns around the greener parts of the East Coast, including several adorable tourist spots around Victoria and Tasmania, the states in Australia most likely to feature English-style villages. Our immediate family moved to the city when Holly and I were old enough for high school, but as soon as we got our university entrance confirmed, the mums ditched the urban flat and went scurrying straight back to the lavender farm in the Dandenongs, where we spent our childhood. They had their own bees and sell candles at outrageous tourist prices from a tiny shopfront. They seem happy. Hallow magic has always skewed towards the practical. I have several cousins who run a blacksmith's forge. It's more hipster art than horseshoeing these days, but that's where their magic finds its source, and good for them, sticking with the old school trade until it became commercially viable again. I have uncles who are butchers, bakers, tailors. Most of my aunts are doctors. Then there's me and Holly. She might be an indie rock star on the rise, and I might be, let's face it, designed for a career in admin. But when it comes to our magic, we're domestic. Holly hides it better than I do. She only cooks if it's something that's going to look amazing on Instagram. She leaves her band clutter around our flat to disguise the fact that it's always spotless. I'm a gender studies major. I know there's nothing wrong with domestic competence, but it feels so anti-feminist. Every time my magic hums with satisfaction from making people comfortable in our home, from cooking a meal or making a bed. Like my magic decided that the only function I'm good for is to be a 1950s housewife. I won't deny that it comes in useful at times, like when you have to set up camp with a horde of 20-year-olds. Deck's steady hands and May's innate understanding of tent geometry went a long way towards being useful, but they weren't the reason that everyone's airbed stayed plump all night, or the ants stayed away from our freshly dug sandy spot, or the air of the sleeping tents smelt faintly of lemons as we awoke for the first full day of Winterfest. That was all me. My magic. And that was me restraining myself. I could have put a mimosa in each of their hands as they crawled out to face the morning and conjured perfect blueberry pancakes out of thin air. But I did not. Sure, there was a pot of cinnamon apple porridge stirring itself on a low campfire, but I'm only human. Also, that pot is a family heirloom. Feeding people makes me happy. Shut up. Sage was jittery and hyper. He tapped out some unknown tune on the leg of his jeans as he took over boiling the kettle for peppermint tea. Deck looked like death warmed up. If I had the strength, I would cut off your giant drumming mitts and stick them on a flagpole. He grunted at Sage, fishing around in our supplies tent for genuine black tea bags. Deck's natural magic levels are so low and so irrelevant to his sense of identity, he doesn't worry about caffeine. Bad night, I said sympathetically. Deck leaned in, hooking an elbow around my neck. Hebes, my own, my precious Hebe, light of my life. He was tapping all night. I think he was drumming in his sleep. You have to do something. Save me, Hebe One Kenobi. You're my only hope. What did you have in mind? Assassination, Deck suggested hopefully. It'll be fine, Sage drawled from across the tent. I'll have it by tonight. Just trying to find the new beat for a song. A new sound. Oh, Deck, I'm so sorry. Honestly, if I knew he was working on a new song, I wouldn't have let him come. Sage, in creative mode, was insufferable. Hey, I'm right here, Sage called out, not sounding remotely offended. Being a genius, you're welcome. My left hand conjured a mimosa and pressed it against Deck's chest, almost without my conscious mind being involved in the process. Leave it with me, I muttered. I'll see what I can do. May could share with Sage without killing him. She normally stayed awake until 3 a.m. anyway. Of course, that was when she had Wi-Fi access. Last night, she kept jolting awake every few hours to check her magic mirror, which she'd bespelled to reflect the contents of her phone, despite all the glitch feedback that a charm like that attracts. It was fine. I didn't need sleep. You can swap with May tonight, I told Deck. She was still asleep in our tent, so there was no one to argue with the change of sleeping arrangements. Deck nodded gratefully, staggered over to the campfire, and started ladling porridge into a fake geek girls know their shit mug. You're an angel, Hebes. You're my general and my hero. I would kiss you if I didn't have a vengeful and suspicious girlfriend. So, this was camping with the band. Not a complete disaster so far, but then Holly hadn't dragged home a new boyfriend yet. The weekend was still young. Speaking of my twin sister, there she was now, walk of no shaming her way up the path to our sheltered spot, wearing yesterday's clothes. Her hair was a bird's nest, her shirt was barely buttoned, and those were not her shoes. Her makeup was perfect. Domestic magic strikes again. I'm in love, Holly announced, helping herself to peppermint tea. I'm going to need coffee for this, grumbled Sage. Do we have to pretend we like whatever Dave Matthews-loving douche canoe you've decided to latch onto this weekend? Or can we skip that part and go straight to convincing you to break up with him? You're tragic and no one wants to sleep with you, Holly said sweetly. I didn't mean a person, Sage. Last night changed my life. I found a sound, the new sound we need to take Fake Geek Girl to the next level. Sage's hand paused, hovering in the middle of the pattern he was tapping out on his own mug. Yeah? Yeah, said Holly. They exchanged a look, a burning mutual love of their band and their music and everything they had in common. If they were remotely attracted to each other, they would have burned us all out in the fire of their love story, but they weren't that, had never been that. It still felt like the rest of us might get scorched if we got too close. Ugh, said Deck into his porridge. If you two are going to be brilliant and inspiring at each other, I'm going back to bed. Whatever, said Holly, helping herself to breakfast. Is Juniper up yet? I need to update her on all the awesomeness she flaked out on last night. So much for taking her with you as a guarantee of good behaviour, I said pointedly. Wow, careful, Hebes, your middle-aged governess is showing. Holly tasted the mug, made a face, obviously hating how perfectly the porridge was seasoned, and wandered over to the tent she'd been supposed to sleep in last night. Junior, you decent? I'm coming in. She unzipped it, then backed away, looking worried. Huh. What's up? Asked Dick. I guess Juniper didn't come home last night either. Get it, Juniper, said Sage, impressed. I caught the hesitation in my sister's voice. Where exactly did you leave her, Holly? It's fine, said Holly. She's a grown-up. I'm sure it's fine. My magic, which had been so happy and content when I thought everyone was comfortable and looked after, gave an uncomfortable lurch. Where had Juniper spent the night? Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates, follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly, find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books, and if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. Don't forget to check out the link to the Mother of Invention Kickstarter this month, June 2017 only. See you next week.